Egzamin maturalny z języka angielskiego. Poziom rozszerzony. Usłyszysz dwukrotnie teksty do zadań od 1 do 3. Przed wysłuchaniem każdego tekstu usłyszysz dźwięk. W nagraniu przewidziane są przerwy na zapoznanie się z poleceniami oraz treścią zadań, sygnalizowane dźwiękiem. Rozwiązuj poszczególne zadania w trakcie słuchania nagrań oraz w czasie przerw po ich wysłuchaniu. Zadanie pierwsze. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania do tekstu pierwszego.
Text 1. Emma Corrin is here today. Emma, you played Princess Diana in Season 4 of The Crown, a popular drama series about the royal family. What did you find most challenging when preparing for the role?
There was something about Diana's intonation that was intriguing. It always went down at the end of everything she said. I picture it as a straight horizontal line which then falls off a cliff. Just imagine a line which suddenly goes down when you finish a sentence or a phrase.
What did you do in order to speak like Diana?
There is an amazing documentary called In Her Own Words. In it, Diana is talking about her life. It helped me practice her voice. And then I worked with a brilliant dialect coach who helped me imitate her in conversation.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Emma Corrin is here today. Emma, you played Princess Diana in Season 4 of The Crown, a popular drama series about the royal family. What did you find most challenging when preparing for the role?
There was something about Diana's intonation that was intriguing. It always went down at the end of everything she said. I picture it as a straight horizontal line which then falls off a cliff. Just imagine a line which suddenly goes down when you finish a sentence or a phrase.
What did you do in order to speak like Diana?
There is an amazing documentary called In Her Own Words. In it, Diana is talking about her life. It helped me practice her voice. And then I worked with a brilliant dialect coach who helped me imitate her in conversation.
Zapoznaj się z treścią zadania do tekstu drugiego.
Text 2.
For some time, a Los Angeles office building had an external glass slide which let riders glide from the 70th floor to the 69th, ensuring a rush of adrenaline. The slide was located on the top floor of the Skyspace Tower. When the building first opened, more than 80% of its space was occupied. By 2013, when it was acquired by a Singapore-based company, just 56% of the space was in use, which meant financial losses. The company realized an innovative solution was necessary to change that and began to discuss how to attract more than just office workers. Numerous ideas were put forward, like an observation deck, bungee jumping from the roof, and a zip line to the ground. Finally, they went for an external glass slide, hoping that this extravagant structure would become a new tourist attraction and draw a number of ventures such as cafes, restaurants and shops to the Skyspace Tower. Unfortunately, the plan didn't work out, and in 2021, it was announced that after 4 years in operation, the slide was going to be closed.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
For some time, a Los Angeles office building had an external glass slide which let riders glide from the 70th floor to the 69th, ensuring a rush of adrenaline. The slide was located on the top floor of the Skyspace Tower. When the building first opened, more than 80% of its space was occupied. By 2013, when it was acquired by a Singapore-based company, just 56% of the space was in use, which meant financial losses. The company realised an innovative solution was necessary to change that and began to discuss how to attract more than just office workers. Numerous ideas were put forward, like an observation deck, bungee jumping from the roof, and a zip line to the ground. Finally, they went for an external glass slide, hoping that this extravagant structure would become a new tourist attraction and draw a number of ventures such as cafes, restaurants and shops to the Skyspace Tower. Unfortunately, the plan didn't work out, and in 2021, it was announced that after 4 years in operation, the slide was going to be closed.
Zapoznaj się z treścią zadania do tekstu trzeciego.
Text 3. Smart speakers using artificial intelligence are becoming an integral part of many homes. A lot of people use them to play music. However, that's only the second most common use. The first is to set a timer, for example, to prevent a meal from burning. They are also used to create shopping lists. Surprisingly, smart speakers can tell a joke too, though this function is rarely selected. They can also be a great way to control lighting and heating systems at home. While most people find smart devices useful, it's clear that more needs to be done to make voice recognition features work more smoothly. A study on the performance of two popular smart devices, Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant, was conducted in 309 locations in the UK and included users with a wide variety of accents. The researchers asked these users to record themselves giving 10 everyday commands such as turn off the lights or play the next song please. The researchers then graded each recording on a scale of 1 to 10, based on whether the smart device was able to understand the owner's accent or not. The study found that smart devices get confused by more than 20% of regional accents. English spoken by Welsh people turned out to be the hardest for smart devices to understand, with the Cardiff accent being the most challenging. Other cities where Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant struggled were Glasgow, Liverpool and Belfast. In contrast, Londoners rarely had any problems controlling their smart equipment.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Smart speakers using artificial intelligence are becoming an integral part of many homes. A lot of people use them to play music. However, that's only the second most common use. The first is to set a timer, for example, to prevent a meal from burning. They are also used to create shopping lists. Surprisingly, smart speakers can tell a joke too, though this function is rarely selected. They can also be a great way to control lighting and heating systems at home. While most people find smart devices useful, it's clear that more needs to be done to make voice recognition features work more smoothly. A study on the performance of two popular smart devices, Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant, was conducted in 309 locations in the UK and included users with a wide variety of accents. The researchers asked these users to record themselves giving 10 everyday commands such as turn off the lights or play the next song, please. The researchers then graded each recording on a scale of 1 to 10, based on whether the smart device was able to understand the owner's accent or not. The study found that smart devices get confused by more than 20% of regional accents. English spoken by Welsh people turned out to be the hardest for smart devices to understand, with the Cardiff accent being the most challenging. Other cities where Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant struggled were Glasgow, Liverpool and Belfast. In contrast, Londoners rarely had any problems controlling their smart equipment.
Zadanie drugie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
Speaker 1.
Many cities with heavy traffic are introducing pricing systems aimed at encouraging cleaner ways of getting to your destination. An example is the EcoPass scheme, in which drivers are charged a fee to enter the central districts of a city. There is an important difference between the EcoPass and most other similar schemes. In cities which use EcoPass, drivers are charged according to the amount of exhaust fumes their type of car produces. So petrol-fueled cars and electric cars aren't charged the same rate to enter the city centre because they're not doing the same damage. In fact, the drivers of electric cars don't have to pay any fee at all. To me, this seems a reasonable approach to take.
Speaker 2. I've just visited my relatives in Vancouver. My impression was that you cannot feel safe in the streets of that city because pedestrians are treated like second-class citizens there. Drivers are supposed to give way to pedestrians at zebra crossings, but in fact they often get as close as an inch from your legs because they are being pressured by the traffic from behind. How did such drivers pass their driving tests? I think many of them need to be sent on refresher courses. On the other hand, the city's bus and subway systems were really reliable with convenient routes and low prices. On the buses, I felt like a first-class citizen, and the subway was also efficient. Speaker 3.
With pedestrians increasingly glued to their mobile phones and a rising death rate among absent-minded jaywalkers, Hong Kong is trialling a novel approach at road crossings. Instead of just relying on traditional red man stop signals, authorities have additionally installed LED lights that bathe crossing points in a red glow. The authorities hope that people looking down at their devices will see the sidewalk lit up and stop. The reactions to the new lights have been mixed. While most pedestrians acknowledged in a survey that the lights did redirect their attention back to the traffic, some of them concluded they would quickly become distracted by their mobiles again.
Speaker 4. Motorists should have more awareness of the problems pedestrians may face. For a start, they should be able to recognise places where pedestrians might want to cross, even if it is not allowed and poses a great risk. Why not put a pedestrian safety section into the driving test so that learner drivers become aware of how dangerous walking in some areas with heavy traffic can be? They could also be shown videos shot from the perspective of a pedestrian trying to cross the street. Speaker 5.
Southern California isn't the first place I would consider an example to follow when discussing transportation policy. San Diego has a highway charging system which allows you to go past drivers stuck in heavy traffic by using an express lane. A charge is imposed for doing so. These express lanes have been called Lexus lanes as they benefit the rich and leave the poor with no solution. It is just not right that people who can afford to pay the charge can get somewhere fast while the rest of us have to wait in traffic jams and breathe in all the pollution. What about improving public transport or encouraging the use of smaller cars instead?
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Speaker 1.
Many cities with heavy traffic are introducing pricing systems aimed at encouraging cleaner ways of getting to your destination. An example is the EcoPass scheme, in which drivers are charged a fee to enter the central districts of a city. There is an important difference between the EcoPass and most other similar schemes. In cities which use EcoPass, drivers are charged according to the amount of exhaust fumes their type of car produces. So petrol-fueled cars and electric cars aren't charged the same rate to enter the city centre because they're not doing the same damage. In fact, the drivers of electric cars don't have to pay any fee at all. To me, this seems a reasonable approach to take.
Speaker 2. I've just visited my relatives in Vancouver. My impression was that you cannot feel safe in the streets of that city because pedestrians are treated like second-class citizens there. Drivers are supposed to give way to pedestrians at zebra crossings, but in fact they often get as close as an inch from your legs because they are being pressured by the traffic from behind. How did such drivers pass their driving tests? I think many of them need to be sent on refresher courses. On the other hand, the city's bus and subway systems were really reliable with convenient routes and low prices. On the buses, I felt like a first-class citizen, and the subway was also efficient. Speaker 3.
With pedestrians increasingly glued to their mobile phones and a rising death rate among absent-minded jaywalkers, Hong Kong is trialling a novel approach at road crossings. Instead of just relying on traditional red man stop signals, authorities have additionally installed LED lights that bathe crossing points in a red glow. The authorities hope that people looking down at their devices will see the sidewalk lit up and stop. The reactions to the new lights have been mixed. While most pedestrians acknowledged in a survey that the lights did redirect their attention back to the traffic, some of them concluded they would quickly become distracted by their mobiles again.
Speaker 4. Motorists should have more awareness of the problems pedestrians may face. For a start, they should be able to recognise places where pedestrians might want to cross, even if it is not allowed and poses a great risk. Why not put a pedestrian safety section into the driving test so that learner drivers become aware of how dangerous walking in some areas with heavy traffic can be? They could also be shown videos shot from the perspective of a pedestrian trying to cross the street. Speaker 5.
Southern California isn't the first place I would consider an example to follow when discussing transportation policy. San Diego has a highway charging system which allows you to go past drivers stuck in heavy traffic by using an express lane. A charge is imposed for doing so. These express lanes have been called Lexus lanes as they benefit the rich and leave the poor with no solution. It is just not right that people who can afford to pay the charge can get somewhere fast while the rest of us have to wait in traffic jams and breathe in all the pollution. What about improving public transport or encouraging the use of smaller cars instead?
Zadanie trzecie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
Thank you for inviting me to share my thoughts on the career of an archaeologist. Well, the popular vision of this job is, of course, exciting excavations and treasure hunts in exotic places. But the truth is that only the lucky few get to work abroad extensively. To do that, you have to know the right people in all the right places, who can secure funding for your expeditions. Many archaeologists end up working locally, which is not as grand as exploring the pyramids or lost cities. However, though it's not as glamorous, believe me, just as much can be discovered about the distant past. Work in my field is definitely not for those who are after job security or good pay, because there is a serious absence of both in my profession. The jobs available are rarely permanent, which means that when the assignment changes, you also change employer. So you don't go into archaeology to become wealthy. You do it out of passion, out of an eagerness to explore the as-yet unknown past. Above all, the job requires patience and dedication, as working on a site is a slow process and takes a lot of time. First, you have to go through all the pre-excavation arrangements, getting various approvals and permission to dig. Next, there is the groundwork. At this stage, you do surveys of the site, desktop research, and make health and safety assessments. Then comes the exhausting process of excavating the site by hand. There is no doubt that as an archaeologist you get a lot of exercise, but the cold and damp you are often exposed to certainly have a negative impact. I have not met an archaeologist who does not suffer from health problems. It is usually the knees, shoulders and back that show the first signs of trouble. And archaeologists can't just pack up during the winter months. They keep working no matter what, until the job is done, sometimes even in freezing temperatures. However, I would not like to discourage you too much. Believe me, there are also many perks, and I'll mention a few of them after a short break.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Thank you for inviting me to share my thoughts on the career of an archaeologist. Well, the popular vision of this job is, of course, exciting excavations and treasure hunts in exotic places. But the truth is that only the lucky few get to work abroad extensively. To do that, you have to know the right people in all the right places, who can secure funding for your expeditions. Many archaeologists end up working locally, which is not as grand as exploring the pyramids or lost cities. However, though it's not as glamorous, believe me, just as much can be discovered about the distant past. Work in my field is definitely not for those who are after job security or good pay, because there is a serious absence of both in my profession. The jobs available are rarely permanent, which means that when the assignment changes, you also change employer. So you don't go into archaeology to become wealthy. You do it out of passion, out of an eagerness to explore the as yet unknown past. Above all, the job requires patience and dedication, as working on a site is a slow process and takes a lot of time. First, you have to go through all the pre-excavation arrangements, getting various approvals and permission to dig. Next, there is the groundwork. At this stage, you do surveys of the site, desktop research, and make health and safety assessments. Then comes the exhausting process of excavating the site by hand. There is no doubt that as an archaeologist you get a lot of exercise, but the cold and damp you are often exposed to certainly have a negative impact. I have not met an archaeologist who does not suffer from health problems. It is usually the knees, shoulders and back that show the first signs of trouble. And archaeologists can't just pack up during the winter months. They keep working no matter what, until the job is done, sometimes even in freezing temperatures. However, I would not like to discourage you too much. Believe me, there are also many perks, and I'll mention a few of them after a short break.
Czas przeznaczony na tę część egzaminu minął.